The time is 7 minutes past 10 on this Friday. And here in the studio, I am lucky enough to have another organist in this week. And it's Dr. Thomas Fielding, who is director of music at St. Augustine Cathedral. So nice to have you back again, Tom.
Thanks, Kara, for having me again.
You are in performance on Sunday at 5 o'clock at St. Augustine. And we're here to talk about the program and some additional things you might see as the program will be enhanced by images.
Yes. So there'll be one piece on the program, one major work, the Esquisse Byzantines of Henri Mulet. Mulet was a very, very little known French composer, born in 1878, but did most of his compositional work in the early 20th century. So the music is in a very, very rich, very late Romantic idiom.
I'm very intrigued by the title. Did you say Exquise?
Oh, I'm sorry. Byzantine. Yes, I should translate. The Byzantine Sketches. So this is a series of 10 musical impressions of different aspects of the architecture of the Sacré-Cœur Basilica on the Montmartre Hill in Paris, which was constructed in the late 18th century at the request of the Cardinal Archbishop of Paris at the time, Hippolyte Guibert. Construction started, I believe, in 1868-69, continued for several years, so right in that period.
It seems kind of modern for a cathedral in France.
Yes, yes, it was. There's a lot of religious and political baggage that goes into that decision. It's interesting. I'm actually doing a lecture recital in Chicago at the end of April that focuses not on the building, not on the construction of that building, but on that particular time period, the Third French Republic, and what was going on, particularly the conflict between the French sense of national identity and of a national church, and what was going on with the papacy starting to sort of flex its muscles and wanting to take control of things. Anyway, so this basilica dates from that time. It's in a big sort of flamboyant Byzantine style. And Mulet's birthplace was in Montmartre. And he served for a time as not the organist, but the choir master for the basilica. The Byzantine Sketches dates from 1920, and as I said, it's a series of 10 very much impressions of different aspects of the architecture. So the movements in order are nef, the nave, vitrail, the stained glass, Lozès, the rose window, chapelle des morts, the chapel of the dead, campanile, which is the bell tower, procession, which is a cognate translation, chant funèbre, a funeral song, Noé, Christmas, and then two Latin titles, In Paradisum, Into Paradise, and Tu es Petra et Porte inferi non prevalebunt adversus te. You are Peter, and the gates of hell will not prevail against you. So that's sort of the culminating statement of faith for Mulet in this cycle. The movements range from the longest, which is the first nave, which runs about 8.5 minutes, to very short, the second movement, stained glass, which is barely 2 minutes long. And they use a lot of unusual colors, stop combinations, very, very fussy. One stop comes on here for a few bars, and then there's another. You can see him sort of painting colors with his use of the organ. So it's a good way to demonstrate to use a lot of the organ's potential for instrumentation and orchestration in that way. Now, what you had mentioned, sort of the other piece I'm going to bring into this is actually a slideshow of corresponding church architecture from different places I've visited, both here and abroad.
How much photography do you do?
Well, I'm not going to claim at all to be a professional photographer. I want this to kind of have the warmth of me sort of sharing my photo album with people, with the audience.
So it'll be from a perspective of a visitor, you know, clicking.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's the Basilica on the Fourvière Hill in Lyon, for example. You know, that's one of the pictures for Nave, and it's a picture of Nave, and there's, you know, tourists with shorts, and they're walking around. And, you know, again,
have improved a lot with the advent of fancy cameras on phones.
Yeah, and Photoshop helps as well. So, you know, some of the glitches have been Photoshopped out. So, you know, they have, the photographs maybe have a little more of a polished look, but they're certainly not, it's certainly not taken from the perspective of someone who has studied photography and that sort of thing.
Why this Mulet piece? Where did you find the piece? Were you scouring through some library? I know you go through a lot of literature in your job.
The final movement, the Tuas Petra, is one of the just war horse pieces of the repertoire. It's extremely popular.
So a lot of people play that one.
Yeah, it's because it's a really flashy, very energetic, very much a crowd pleaser kind of piece, more recently, Virgil Fox used to play it quite a bit. Diane Bish plays it quite a bit. And even now, it'll get excerpted. I mean, I think it's been showing up a lot on Ken Cowan's programs. People like that who want that sort of that razzle-dazzle finish to a program. I actually learned that piece when I was in high school. I was quite a fan of Virgil Fox's. He was sort of the originator of that, very much that sort of pops style of organ playing, and had several recordings of him playing that. So I actually learned it first at my senior year of high school. Bought the score, which is from the French publisher Leduc, who still owns the score.
He discovered there were nine more pieces.
Yeah, and I just kind of put it on. I learned the movement I wanted to learn to show off, and put the rest of it on the shelf, basically. I mean. And then over the years have flipped through it and thought, you know, this looks interesting. Maybe I should do this. And then in the middle, late 90s, the Austin Organ Company from Hartford, Connecticut, put a very large instrument in the National Shrine of Our Lady of Shestakova in Pennsylvania. And Thomas Murray from Yale recorded the complete cycle. And I heard that recording. I thought, oh, these are really interesting pieces. But again, kind of put it down and got distracted by other things. And it's only been since I've been the director of music at St. Augustine, where I founded the concert series and committed myself to playing an annual organ recital. Mostly to supplement the Sellner Fund that funds the concert series. Of course, I don't pay myself to do this. So it really, all of the free will offering that's collected goes straight to that fund to support some of the other concerts. The flip side of that, I don't travel a lot for recitals, but a fair number per year. Of course, when you're in a different city and a different instrument every time, different venue every time, you can repeat repertoire because you assume that most of these people haven't heard you before. Playing once a year at St. Augustine means it's actually encouraged me to learn a lot of new repertoire
because
I don't want to play the same 10 pieces every year. It's been several years now since I've learned a major work. Last one was probably 4 years ago. I learned the complete Symphonie Romane of Charles-Marie Vidor. And got to thinking it was time to do something, to really sit down and learn another major work. And I tossed around some ideas and looked at this, and I thought, this is a good time just to sit with these pieces and do this. The total runtime of the piece is about 55 minutes, and I do like to do something with at least one of the concerts a year that has something, some sort of unique aspect, something that maybe you wouldn't expect to see at a concert in the church, this time being the slideshow.
I would like to back up a moment and fill in for listeners that Tom Fielding here, director of music at St. Augustine Cathedral, where you prepare music for services week in and week out. That is a huge portion of your time. But then you created, is it 3 years now? 4 years?
This is the fourth year as sacred music as the cathedral. Mm-hmm. The first year, I just wanted to try out a four concert series to see if it would work. And I just did that under the auspices of the 10th anniversary of the installation of the cathedral's Nichols and Simpson organ. So that was the 2012-13 series. That went off remarkably well.
You've drawn on a group of, very skilled, really amazing musicians from near and far for this series, which is always free with a goodwill offering. It's open to all the public. I am wondering, though, about the congregation at St. Augustine. By creating this series, does the value of music itself seem to be rising in importance? Does it give a higher profile and understanding of what goes into even a service of music?
That's a very interesting question. I have a number of people who are very supportive of the liturgical music, of the things we do on the weekend, the cathedral choir, myself, who don't come to the concerts. Mm-hmm. And then there are those people. It was interesting. A good illustration, our February concert was the Saints Peter and Paul Choral Scholars and All Professional Choir from Naperville, Illinois. And their director, Matthew Sprinkle, and I were on your show. Mm-hmm. And that was the same night as the KSO had a concert at 8 o'clock. Our program was at 7 o'clock, and I thought, oh goodness, oh I just can't compete with the KSO. KSO usually performs on Saturday night. I'm not being critical of them. I mean. But I had a couple come and. They are parishioners, and they came about 6 o'clock. I think they were there for something else. I don't know if something was going on with the school or why they were there. But they said, "Oh, well, we didn't realize there was a concert tonight." And I kind of scratched my head and I thought, "Well, I mean, it's been in our bulletin. It's been in our, there was publicity." But they said, "Oh, we're gonna stay for the first half and then drive on over to Miller for the second half." And they were just delighted. And they caught me after one of the weekend masses this last weekend and said, "Oh, we can't wait. This is such an exciting thing you're doing for the community and to share the organ, guest musicians here and have become very supportive." So there is a little bit of overlap, and I think it does help raise the spirit of things, the support for just the musicians and all that sort of thing.
Well, because it is a lot of work, it's on top of everything else you do, and yet having this opportunity to bring people are wonderful musicians into town, and of course to stretch your own performing muscles and make sure that you're staying on top of that, because otherwise that could suffer.
Like I said, it's for me, it's the challenge of having to do having to prepare a different program every year. I enjoy having that challenge. My idea with this series was to focus on regional artists. Obviously, this last season we've had some. We've broadened that quite a bit, actually. Christian Bischoff, you remember, from Germany played in September, which was a really delightful collaboration with the American Guild of Organists chapter. And we had our programming season kickoff for the AGO chapter. We had a catered meal and just really well attended and just a really energetic way to start the season. And then Gail Archer from New York City played in November. And again, a completely different program than what we heard in September. The Saints Peter and Paul Choral Scholars, like I mentioned, in February, and now I'll be wrapping up this season. So
the concert is at 5 o'clock on Sunday at St. Augustine Church, and the concert features a work called Byzantine Sketches, yes, which details the special parts of a famous church, Sacré-Cœur. Yeah. In Paris, from you couldn't get a more Parisian composer, Henri Moulay, who grew up in Montmartre. And it's from the 1920s, which, the color of that era is so wonderful. So
yeah, a lot of the harmonies are just his use of tonality is just quintessential impressionism, with whole tone scales and added note chords and extended harmonies and just very, very colorful writing in every way.
Well, I need to go refresh our teapot, so why don't we put on a piece of music and have a listen to music by Henri Moulay. This is La Nef.
Yes, so this is the first movement of the cycle, Nef, the nave of church, of course, is the main body of the church, where people, the largest part of the church, because it's where the congregation sits. And so this movement captures that sense of vast expansiveness with a slow tempo and very sort of the gravitas of the organ's stops.
I'm with Thomas Fielding, who will be performing music by Henri Moulay on Sunday at 5 o'clock at St. Augustine Church. And the piece is one long suite called Byzantine Sketches. Tom, we just heard the very first movement. I don't suppose that was you in the recording.
That was? Just earlier this week, there's a number. I find recording myself to be helpful in a number of ways, especially when I'm taking a new piece for me out for a spin. Mm-hmm. I have a tabletop snowball microphone, a USB which plugs right into my computer, and I record straight into Audacity, which is some freeware. It's by professional standards, it's kind of a primitive setup, but I like the sense, again, of this recording hasn't been overly engineered. You're getting, I pressed record on Audacity and went up and did about an hour of playing different movements as I was thinking about what I wanted to play on the broadcast today.
And we're hearing the Nichols and Simpson organ.
So this is me at St. Augustine just earlier this week. Another nice thing,
of course, I mean, it's if it were liking to record yourself. I mean, you must have to build up this resistance to hitting playback.
Well, that's part of why it's a good exercise. Because of course, when I sat down to record myself, the first thing that went on in my mind is, this has to be good enough to play on the radio, where I'm not, turning red in the studio. It's this, that, and the other, and so it creates that performance mindset, which I find extremely helpful. Like I said, when it's the first time I've taken a piece, in the public. Because you don't have that, that repeated performing experience with it. My preparation has been thorough. I feel comfortable and confident. But again, it's creating that, just that edge that you have in a live performance of, I have one time to do this right. I can't go back and rehearse this passage again and again and again. It has to be right this time. And the other thing is, then, is I can take those recordings and then a day or two later sit back at home and listen to them and really get the sense of what my playing sounds like. Sort of stepping outside of myself, sitting back and not doing it at the same time, but truly listening to it like an audience member. And that's incredibly instructive. One of the things I notice about these recordings that I made earlier this week is they sound very in a sense, like, as strict, maybe is the word I'm looking for. There's a certain freedom in give and take with the rhythm and the rubato and so forth that's not there yet. And so as I've been working since I've listened to these, it's been, okay, you know, I've got the notes and the rhythms down. I feel confident with those. Now let's start to free things up and really work on phrasing and music and shaping and these, you know, things that make
the final choices of how you want to communicate.
Exactly.
You know, what the parts that touch me, how do I want to express that?
Or wow, at the console, this sounded like a huge break in the music or a big phrase. And wow, down in the room, down halfway across the church, it doesn't sound that big. I really want to take more time there. It helps you with pacing and just lots of things. The physical arrangement of the cathedral, for those who have not been there before, it's the organ pipes themselves are in two large cases on either side of the gallery, and the console is right in the middle of it. So the organist is getting very direct sound. Mm. And of course, the instrument is voiced to be heard down in the nave. Where the reflective surfaces, just the ambience of the room, warms up the sound, blends the sound, so the instrument sounds very different down in the room than it does at the console. And again, the recordings help me to gauge the balance with the swell boxes, stops, and it's a little different, obviously, because, I mean, the St. Augustine organ is my instrument. It's the one I play almost every day, whether it's practicing or in services, masses, whatever the occasion is. So after 5 years, I know it pretty intimately. There's stop combinations that are my favorites. My sense of I can pretty well project, this is going to probably sound like this in the room. But the recording still helps.
Yeah, absolutely. And the pieces themselves by Henri Mounet, this Byzantine Sketches suite that goes through different pictures of the Sacré-Cœur Cathedral, does it help you to visualize or even make up your own story about what he's trying to say in each piece?
Millet himself was a very shy and reclusive personality. In fact, the last 30 years of his life, he lived in a very, very small town out in rural France in a convent being taken care of by a group of nuns. Previously, right before that period, he had actually taken large stacks of his music and burned the scores. Some of his friends had copies, and that's how a lot of his music survives to us. Very little of it was published in his lifetime. Very little of it is still published. It was published at all. And he was someone who just he really, really did not seek out attention or the limelight. We don't have a lot of his own writing to go on. You know, what was I thinking when I wrote this? I mean, in a good way, not what was I thinking, but, you know, what was going on in his mind, you know, what was his, except from the title of the piece itself that we know, you know, it's dedicated à la mémoire, to the memory of the Sacré-Cœur Basilica. And I think that's kind of, that's part of also where the slideshow comes into play. For me, is these pieces have obviously they're descriptive pieces. It's a programmatic work. But to capture kind of the baggage I'm bringing to this piece, you know, when I think of, you know, the different naves that I have filled with sound in the course of my career, you know, the Basilica of the National Shrine, the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C., being, you know, very, very big, very big room, to much smaller examples, smaller cathedrals, parish churches, seeing that as I've gone to these different places already, the photographs I've snapped long before I ever thought of doing this program, reflect an interest in those kinds of details. I have close-ups of rose windows just because they're just beautiful pieces of art, even just in themselves, without their context.
Without the setting, yeah. Again, let's refresh listeners. This is a concert beginning at 5 o'clock on Sunday. One piece of music, which will be enhanced by the visual medium, projected photographs. Mm-hmm. This is called Byzantine Sketches. And so we'll be kind of off to European churches and hearing devotional music to architecture. Like, it's not, I mean, it isn't a sacred piece, but it's almost.
Yeah, it's not, yeah, right. It's not a.
He sounds like a very sacred sort of guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's sacred in the sense of, you know, in the sense of what any good art does, which is, I think there's a sense that it should bring the mind into some kind of, you know, some sort of, you know, at the broadest level, transcendent or, you know, the human spirit or, you know, a sense of the divine. I mean, that's the name of the concert series, you know, Sacred Music at the Cathedral. The first thing that ever happens when a Catholic church is built is a rite of dedication and consecration, particularly of consecration where the walls of the building are rubbed with blessed oils. So Catholics very much have a sense of sacred space in ways that a lot of other churches don't have for a variety of good reasons. So there is a sense that that in that act of dedication and consecration, this particular sacred space is being set aside for one particular purpose. What an audience member brings to that is going to vary. It's no different than the varied audiences you would get at the Michigan Festival of Sacred Music, which has, you know, even a broader programming in the sense of lots of world music and world religions and so forth. But it's not the goal is not to proselytize or to evangelize. The point is to simply offer programming that engages the audience in a way that they can hopefully experience something just a little larger than themselves.
Well said. Why don't we listen to another piece, You Again in St. Augustine Cathedral with music of Henri Moulay. I have to admit, this tea turned out really, really well. So let's take a break.
So we can sip a little more.
So we can have some more tea.
Are we going to listen to Rosace then, a little bit of that?
Okay.
Yeah, this is the Rose Window Movement. It's a lovely quieter movement, flutes, and so forth.
From the Byzantine Sketches.
From the Byzantine Sketches.
That's Tom Fielding on The King of Instruments, the organ, playing music of Henri Moulay, a piece you've prepared for Sunday at 5 o'clock. It'll be a free concert open to the public and part of the Sacred Music at the Cathedral series. It's at St. Augustine Cathedral. You created the series 3-4 years ago, and it's turned out rather well. It's 4 times a year now?
4 concerts a year. Our first season was very well attended. We had a slump in attendance for the next couple years. I don't know why that was. It may have been my own publicity efforts or neglect of those. And then this last season has kind of regained some momentum. Attendance was poor enough in the last couple years. I kind of thought in my mind, well, I'll see how the season goes, and maybe this really isn't an endeavor that there's a demand for, and maybe it's best that, you know, just kind of let that go. But I mean, things have been very good this whole season, so I'm already planning for the next season. Plans aren't finalized yet. I have a good outline in my mind, but it's still early enough where a lot of people sort of hesitate to commit to things, you know, a year off. It's different people work in different ways.
Absolutely,
I guess. So.
Yeah. I like that you brought up the Michigan Festival of Sacred Music, which it sounds like you and maybe Betsy start.
Yeah, we have a good working relationship, and in fact, one of our concerts next year, one of the programs I do know that has been finalized, will be a collaboration, a co-sponsorship with them again.
And that festival, you know, has, in order to retain audiences, has gone to kind of every year.
Yes. Program. Yes. Of course, they always have an organ recital as part of their offerings as well. So, just a sneak peek into next year, Friday, November 3rd, which is 2 days after the Feast of All Saints Day, we'll be presenting Kevin Vaughn, who is professor of organ at Goshen College, doctoral student. He's not a student anymore. He holds a doctorate from Notre Dame and does some adjunct teaching there as well, who will do a full recital for us and the featured work. It'll be a more eclectic program, but the major work on that program will be the Toussaint Mass, the All Saints Day Mass by 20th century French composer Gaston Lutèce, which is very, very much in a modernist idiom, very, very wild writing, lots of fun. And then I believe he's doing a master class sponsored by the American Guild of Organists chapter then the next day. So we've got sort of three organizations coming together then for that weekend.
Good collaboration.
Yeah.
That the American chapter of the American Guild of Organists puts on a lot of activities throughout the year.
This is this chapter is one of the more active I dare say amicable chapters that I've been involved in. One of the things I know you've said when you started welcoming our soloists, our guests here on your show, was you just found it was so interesting to talk to organists because we all seem to have very, very firm opinions about things, and so you can imagine there's an upside and a downside to that. But everyone in the Southwest Michigan chapter seems to have a very positive working relationship with each other.
Well, they bring their passion, but they also like to share.
But it's
passion.
Very respectful, and I think that's the important thing. I mean, people are going to have differences of opinion. That's part of what makes makes things interesting. But it's the level of respect that people have for each other and for their differences of opinion that just keep it a very that make that a very, very good thing.
Well, it wouldn't be worth anything if you didn't put it in front of the public too, like you are on Sunday. And we're having a visit from the virtuoso Cameron Carpenter tomorrow as well as next Saturday, which is very exciting too, for I imagine, for a lot of people in the organ world will be
and actually
in that.
This is in Battle Creek on Sunday at 4 o'clock. Dr. Mark Wells, who is has probably been on your show before as
Absolutely.
Well for various things,
yeah.
Is actually doing his Kellogg Community College faculty recital at St. Philip's. I believe that's 4 o'clock. So this is a big organ weekend for us in this area.
Well, thanks for sharing a little of it here on WMUK.
Sure.
We have about just enough time to hear this flashy final movement.
This is the 2S Petra, the last movement, really energetic French toccata from the Byzantine Sketches by Henri Moulay.
My guest, Tom Fielding, will perform the full work, enhanced by photography, on Sunday at 5 o'clock at St. Augustine Catholic Church. Details are available on Facebook. You also have a website, Tom Fielding, Thomas Fielding.
ThomasFielding.com, yeah.
All right. Here's music of Henri Moulay.